We're doing our Parsha class. This week the Parsha is Miketz, and as usual we run through the Parsha and then review it, trying to gain more depth. So our Parsha takes us, it's been 2 years since the Sarah Mashkim was reappointed as the butler. And Paro has two dreams. He sees seven fat cows being consumed by seven skinny cows, and the seven skinny cows don't change. He sees seven fat stalks being consumed by seven skinny stalks. And again, he is very upset. He doesn't know the interpretation. He calls the wise men. They can't help him. And the butler tells him, you know, there was a young man in jail by us who knew how to interpret dreams correctly. And they bring Yosef before Paro, and he interprets the dreams that there will be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And he advises Paro to have people who will take care to store, to have a person who's in charge to ensure that the 7 years of plenty will support the 7 years of famine. And Paro tells his advisors, "Have you ever seen a man as smart as this man?" So Paro tells him, "Okay, you're so smart, you're going to be in charge." And he gives him his ring and dresses him in royal clothing and has him ride his the chariot right next to him. They call him Avreich, and he's in charge of Egypt. And Yosef is given the daughter of Potiphar. That's to quit his name, to show that he's completely clean. He marries Potiphar's daughter. It's a political appointment. And Yosef's 30 years old, and he travels to see the land, and he sets up storage houses, and he collects all the taxes that he's taxing. He collects, and he collects tremendous amounts of food in those storage houses. He has two children, Menashe and Ephraim, and the years of famine come, and throughout the world there is a famine. And they come to Paro, they ask him for bread, and Paro says, "Do what Yosef tells you." Now Yosef starts selling them the food he collected, and all around the world people hear there's food in Egypt, so people start making a journey to Egypt, and Yaakov sends his kids, and when they come in, they're brought before Yosef, and Yosef says, "You guys are spies." And they say, "No, we're 12 of one father, one is missing, and the little ones we left at home." And Yosef puts them in prison. And after 3 days, he tells them, "Look, I'm scared of God, so we'll keep one of your brothers here in jail. You go home and bring me the little one." And the brothers start muttering to one another, "It's our fault. We let one of our brothers go. That's why, again, one of our brothers is being taken from us by force." And Reuven says, "I told you, you didn't listen." And Yosef understood all this. He went away and wept. And he takes Shimon. And they are sent home with all the food, and under all the food, they find that he tells the one of his men to put back all their money. They're all scared. They ask themselves, "What's God doing to us?" When they see the money, and they come back home to Yaakov, and they tell him what happened, and Yaakov is upset at them. "What are you guys doing?" And Reuven says, "Let me go. I'll give you two of my sons. You'll punish me with two of my sons if I don't bring Binyamin back." And he says, "No way." And things are getting tough. And Yehuda tells him, "Okay, if you send the brother, we'll go. And if not, we ain't going, because he told us not to come without the little one." And Yehuda says, "I will sin for you all my days, even in the world to come, if I don't succeed. Now let us go, because we could have been back already twice." So Yaakov says, "Fine, but go with gifts and bring back all the money that was returned with extra money. Who knows, maybe the price went up, and God should give you mercy before the men." They bring the gifts, they eat with Yosef, they party with Yosef. At the end of the meal, they head back home, and Yosef tells his man, "Put my goblet in their sack." And after they leave Egypt, his men give chase, they catch up to the brothers, and they tell them, "What's wrong with you guys? We treated you so well. You steal the king's goblets." And the brothers say, "What do you mean? We're so honest. We even brought back the money you by mistake gave us back. We wouldn't do such thing." They search their bags, and of course they find the goblet in Binyamin's bag. Everyone tears their clothing. They come back to Yosef's house, And Yosef says, what's wrong with you guys? Don't you know I'll figure out who stole my goblet? Yehuda says, what can we do? Obviously, God found us sinful and we will all be your slaves. And Yosef says, no, you guys don't have to do that. You guys go home and just leave me the guy who stole my goblet. He's going to be my slave from now on. End of story for this week's parsha. Okay, let's begin again. And Binyamin, the one who was caught with the goblet. And we're going to dedicate our learning tonight to Rachel Gindel, Bas Chana Gittel. Hashem should bless her, give her happiness and strength. And we're in the beginning of our parsha, Parshas Mikates, and Rav Nachman Mibreslov told us a very interesting line. Rav Nachman Mibreslov said, I want you to know, En Yeyush Ba'olam Klal. En Yeyush, there's no giving up, there's no despair in this world at all. V'haikar, and the main thing you got to remember, Shelo Lefachet Klal, never to be scared. Kol Ha'olam Kulo, the whole world, Gesher Tzar Me'od, is but a short bridge. V'haikar, and the main point is, Lo Lefachet Klal, don't be scared. And we can understand this based on what we learned a few nights ago in Iyov, where Hashem tells Iyov, what do you begin to understand about the world? Your life does not end when you die. The time you have on this planet is very small. It's like a short bridge compared to the huge journey that's still ahead of you. So you have questions about this segment of your journey. Those are good questions. But you have to understand it's only a part of the journey. It's a very important part of the journey, but it's only a part of the journey. A person who feels Hashem's presence in his life doesn't have to be scared. He has to sometimes be concerned. He has to figure out how he's going to deal with the situations that life places before him. But he does not have to be scared. This is a concept that Chovat HaTalmidim, the Rebbe of Piaseczna, stresses. He says, hey, you shouldn't get up in the morning and be scared and stay under the covers. That's a person who is not a ma'amin. When you know Hashem is standing at your side, so then you have to be concerned. You have to figure out, how am I going to make this work? It is our responsibility to think about things in this world and do our best to succeed. But at the end of the day, we know we don't control the world, and we know that Hashem is with us. Here we have a young man whose own family has turned their backs on him. And he's worked very hard. I'm not talking about Yosef yet. I want to jump to a different part of Jewish history, where there's this young man who has fought many battles on behalf of the Jewish people. And if there's one man whose name is on all the post office boxes wanted, it's his face. They want him dead because he's been such a faithful soldier. And now, the king of Israel turns against him and decides he's plotting a rebellion. His name is David. David HaMelech. Here David risked his life. It was the greatest soldier in the army. And the Philistines actually are all talking, he's the man we got to bump off. They're talking what kind of ransom they're putting on David's head. He's the one they're scared of most. So all around Israel, the enemies of Israel want David dead. And for being such a good soldier, what reward does he get? The king puts a ransom on his head too. King Saul says, I want him dead too. So now David is on the run. And where is he going to turn to? What's he supposed to do? Yes, the prophet told him, you're going to be the king of Israel. But right now he doesn't see how that's ever going to happen. What he sees now is that he's got nowhere to run. He's done everything right. He's done nothing wrong. And the price he's paying for doing everything right is that his wife is taken from him, his name is taken from him, and he's being hunted like a fugitive. And David the Melech looks around. I look to the hilltops. Where can I hope to have help from? The Philistines, they want me dead. The Jews, now they want me dead. King Saul focuses the efforts of the army on capturing David, as though that is the first concern of the Jewish army right now, to wipe David off the map. So David says, who's going to help me? His own family is killed. He brings his father, his mother, his siblings, he brings them to the Ammonite king, he asks him, watch my family, and they're all murdered. So now he's left without a family, he's got nothing. He's got a wife who's taken away from him and given to another man. What does he have in this world? What does he say? Where's my help going to come from? Ezri Me'im Hashem. My help is from the one who created this world. I know I can't stand up to this alone. I don't know how I'm going to succeed. I know I'm going to do my best. I'm going to fight. I'm going to try. And I know that at the end of the day, Ezri Me'im Hashem Oseh Shamayim Va'aretz. Hashem says, Imo Anochi V'tzara. Hashem says when a person is in a difficult situation, he has to know that Hashem is with him. The wording of the Medrash is, it says, though Hashem says, I'm suffering every tear he sheds, I shed a tear too. What do we sing tonight? Ma'oz Tzul Yeshuati. The strength, the rock of my salvation. What's the whole idea of Hanukkah? We begin with one little light. And it grows. Another light, another light, another light, until finally you have 8 shining lights. Life is filled with ups and downs. The Rambam writes, when you give tzedakah, you're not only helping the poor, you're helping yourself, because poverty is a cycle in the world. No one family is always wealthy, no one family is always poor. It's a cycle. When you help society, you're helping yourself. If not your son, your grandson. If not your grandson, the next generation. No one can be assured that their children will not need assistance. And when you help that cycle keep rolling of helping one another, helping others in need, when you help organizations that help others, you're really helping yourself. Right now, you're the one who could help the organization. But what's going to be in a year or in a decade? Money is round because it keeps going from one to another. Kesef, nichsaf, Zuz, Zazim, the Medrash says every term in Hebrew for money is indicative of this concept. The money keeps moving. It doesn't stay in one family. There's no one family that's going to be wealthy forever. One of the keys to holding out during rough times is to remember Yosef. To remember that the course of events can change in a moment. And the part of it is the Torah from Parshas Toldos onward takes on the form of a masquerade party. Who are you looking at? In Parshas Toldos, Yitzchak thinks he's blessing Yaakov. He thinks he's blessing Esau. Turns out it's Yaakov. Yaakov comes out to Lavan. Yaakov thinks he's going to trick Lavan. Lavan tricks him. He thinks he's marrying Rachel. He ends up marrying Leah. All the time you see this repeating cycle. Things are not what they seem. Is his name Yaakov? Is his name Yisrael? Is Yosef the chosen one? Is Yosef the hated one? Is this Yosef? Is it Tzofnas Paneach, the Egyptian king? Are they suspected as spies? Are they beloved because they're the king's brethren? You constantly see that things switch in a matter of moments. With one sentence, things switch. Paro's birthday party came at the end of last week's parasha. And in heavens it was decreed that on that day, the butler would be reinstated and Yosef would be freed from jail. Yosef was supposed to be freed on that day. And Yosef, on his level, should have continued his davening to Hashem. And on different levels, people are supposed to do different amounts of hishtadlut. Different amounts of effort. What's right for one is not right for the other. Depends on what level of a tzaddik a person is. Yosef, on some level, erred in the way he asked the Sar Mashkim. Perhaps it was in the fact that he asked. Perhaps it was in the amount of faith he put in this contact he has up there. Our sages say that Yosef's great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter, Queen Esther, rectified this. When she became queen, and the Jews were in trouble, what she did was, she took their Hitler, their greatest enemy, Haman, and she invited him to a party. So the Jewish people would not say, we have contacts up there, the queen's our sister, come on, we're going to be okay, we're going to make it. No, Esther wanted word to get out. Esther is trying to sweet talk the king. You don't have any hope up there in the palace. She's taking sides with Haman. Look, she's having a private dinner with him. so the Jews would daven. Perhaps Yosef's error was in the amount of confidence he put in the request, not in the mere fact that he made the request. And so in heaven it was decreed that he needs another 2 years in jail. And at the end of those 2 years, Paro has a dream. And this is another interesting point. From Yaakov to the end of the story of Yaakov, we have a focus on dreams. Yaakov dreams. He dreams about the ladder. He dreams about the sheep. Yaakov has dreams. He has visions. And then Yosef continues in his footsteps and has visions. And then Paro has dreams. And the butler has dreams. And the baker has dreams. And we're talking about a lot of dreams. So Paro has a dream and he's standing by the Nile, the source of sustenance of Egypt. And out come 7 cows and they're grazing. And 7 skinny cows come out and consume them. That's unnatural. Cows are herbivores. They don't even have the molars to chew meat. It's not natural for a cow to... God made herbivores that they only have front teeth. They don't have back teeth. They can't chew meat. They can just take off the plants, and then their stomach, that they take it down as raw plants, and then the stomach has... That's why kosher animals, herbivores, have 4 stomachs, because the part of the digestive process is that they keep chewing the food. They take it all in, it goes into the first stomach, then it comes back up, and they chew it, and they grind it down again. So they're always chewing. Right? The gum-chewing boy, the cud-chewing cow. You guys know the song? The gum-chewing boy, the cud-chewing cow. There is a difference. I see it now. It's an intelligent look on the face of the cow. So the cow chews its cud because it's an herbivore. Herbivores don't have back teeth. The Gemara says you want to know if an animal's kosher, just check if it has back teeth. It can't grind meat. It doesn't have that capacity. So this is an unnatural dream to see 7 cows, skinny cows, eat the 7 fat cows. And he gets up and he's bothered and he goes back to sleep and he has another dream which is also unnatural. Sees 7 stalks that are healthy and then 7 thin stalks block out the 7 skinny stalks. If you say it means they swallowed them, well, stalks don't have mouths. How could they swallow them? So that doesn't seem too logical. And in the morning, he's very upset. So he calls all the wise men, and they start giving him interpretations. You're going to have 7 daughters, they're going to die. You're going to have 7 wars, and you're going to lose 7 wars. All kinds of interpretations. And Paro says, no, that's not it. How does Paro know? So one interpretation is that he dreamt the interpretation and forgot it. And he kept waiting for someone to jog his memory. Another interpretation we could say is Nikarin Divrei Emet. What we were learning a few minutes ago in the Sefer Amidot. So the butler tells Paro, I have to mention something very not nice. Back when you got upset at me, this is the story that happened. And there was this lad there who interpreted our dreams correctly. Now, Chazal tell us that throughout history we see people who, whenever they're about to do a favor to someone, they always stick in a knife to knock him down. One of those is this butler. He automatically says all of Yosef's faults. He interpreted the dream correctly, but before he gets to that line, he has to first introduce, who is this Yosef? He's a lad. He's not so fitting. He's a Hebrew. You know, here in Egypt, no one likes them. He was a slave. So in our laws, it says you can't put him in, you can't appoint him to any public office. He makes sure to throw in his poison, his venom, before he introduces Yosef. And it's interesting that we see many correlations between Yosef and David. That's what we began our learning with tonight. The correlations between Yosef and David. The moments where everyone seems to have turned their back on them. And Yosef is in a similar plight. Let's see what Yosef underwent. His own family stripped him naked and sold him as a slave. He's in Egypt, a place where they hate Hebrews. They won't even eat with them. And in Egypt, he does everything right. He stands up to the test. And for doing everything right, he gets imprisoned. And all of Egypt is talking about him. What a bum. Look at him. His master treated him so nicely and he took advantage of it. So now all the newspapers have been talking about Yosef and he's put in jail. And he spends quite a number of years in that jail. These are the last 2 years. He's been in jail a long time. Different opinions in Chazal, how many years? But possibly a decade. He's been in jail a very long time. And that it's all for doing what was right. And in jail, if you'd ask Yosef, what hope do you have? Me'ayin yavoy zli. How is the future going to be any better, Yosef? How are you going to get yourself out of this? Potiphar can't let you out. He's not going to turn on his wife suddenly. He put you in the best possible jail because he realizes you're in the right. But at the end of the day, that's it. It's been ruled. You're in jail. That's it. You have a life sentence. Now what? What's Yosef's future? Ask Yosef, how are you ever going to get out of here? Yosef doesn't know. We don't always have the solutions. And Yosef had two choices in that jail. He could be embittered, or he could say, Ezri me'im Hashem, Hashem is with me. And Yosef chooses for that one. And because he chooses for that one, he can be a positive person. And when he's a positive person, then he starts becoming well-liked. He grows, and finally he's given a position of responsibility in the jail. Now you ask Yosef, why are you being a smiley person? Why are you smiling? What's good about life? Yosef, doesn't life stink? Come on, you did what's right and look what you got for it. Yosef could have asked himself that question 10 times. The key in life is to say, I don't have an answer for all of that. But I know there's someone up there who's making the decisions. I have to do what I have to do and I know he's with me. Now, what's his plan? I don't know. I got to do my part of the deal. My part of the deal is to be a faithful person. And Yosef is consistently faithful. He's faithful as his servant, as the servant of Potiphar. He's faithful in the jail, and he's going to be faithful to Paro. Yosef does his job to the T with tremendous honesty. So now the moment comes when Paro needs him. And Paro takes him out of jail. They rush him out of jail, they shave him, they change his clothing, and they bring him before Paro. There's a beautiful Kutzker Vort here. The Kutzker Rebbe says, why did they rush him out of jail? Why does the Pasuk have to tell us they rushed him out of jail? Because a person has to know that in heaven it is measured down to the moment how long a person is supposed to be in suffering. It doesn't just happen. They've decided exactly how many seconds he's supposed to be in jail. The second it is over, so that's it. Why should he suffer? So they rush him out of jail. Now he's got to run. No, go get your haircut. Go get on the royal clothing. At that moment, it was supposed to switch. So that's why the Pasuk mentions that they rushed him out of the jail to teach us this concept that there is a moment. Everything is measured in Shemayim. So Paro tells Yosef the dream, and he leaves out some interesting details. And he begins by praising Yosef. And he says, I heard about you, that you just hear a dream and you can interpret it. And Yosef says, no, that's not me. God's going to answer you. That's quite some goal. You're correcting the king? Hey, listen here, lad. You just came out of jail, you bum. What are you telling me? I'm telling you this is what I heard about you, and you're saying, no, not me. Think about what it took for Yosef to give that answer. It would be very convenient for Yosef to be quiet. Why should he say anything? That's part of Yosef's greatness. We see this greatness throughout. The tzaddikim are honest, and they're not scared of being honest, especially when it's about taking credit for something they don't deserve credit. There you'll find their honesty shine. Yosef says, no, Hashem should answer you. And he's talking to a pagan. He's not talking to someone who believes in Hashem. Elohim. Paro tells Yosef, he tells him the dream, and he changes the details. And Yosef tells Paro, your two dreams are giving you the same message. Elohim, that which Hashem is planning to do, he revealed to you. The 7 cows and the 7 stalks correspond to 7 years. And there are going to be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. God let you know what's going to be in the future. And you should know that the 7 years of famine will completely wipe out all the blessing that was here from the years of plenty. There'll be no remnant. And the fact that the dream was repeated in two different ways is to tell you that God's ready to do it right away. It's about to start. Yeah.
Is there any people who don't? Isn't there something about like? Is there anyone who learns out from this the present day cycles of economic cycles?
I'm unaware of that. There is a stress on clothing. There is a stress on externals. Yosef is going to be dressed with royal clothing. Yosef coming out of jail, they change his clothes. Yosef grew a beard since the brothers saw him, so they're not going to recognize him. Part of what we see in the story of Yosef and part of what we see throughout the Tanakh is that a tzara is really like a mask. A tzara, a situation when a person is in a tzara, is really a situation where there is a mask. Just like in 1 second you take off the mask, you see who's really there. So too, in 1 second Hashem could remove the mask and show the person, hey, this could all work out. Everything could be great. I have a big plan for you. Everything's going to be great. Hashem is metzitz miben ha'akim. He's watching behind the cracks of the wall and he's planning something. We don't always know what he's planning. We have to play our role. We have to do what's right. But at the end of the day, we also have to know that things can change in a moment. 10 days ago, I was meeting with someone about what we can do about the dangers that Am Yisrael is facing today. And I emailed him a few days ago. I said, where are we holding on all of that? He said to me, don't you know the world's a different place ever since WikiLeaks? All the politicians in America are busy with other things. There's Israel is suddenly not center stage. they're busy with diplomatic struggles that the United States has to face now because of all kinds of classified information that was revealed. So in one day,
that's Hashem helping.
We hope so. We don't yet know where it's going to lead to. But in one day, the whole world changed. One day, suddenly the focus of the world changes. We don't always know where Hashem is going to make things change. We don't know. We don't know what the plan is. But we have to recognize this concept that although to us things seem insurmountable, there is no such concept. There's no such concept as something insurmountable before God. And that is maybe part of the idea of the masks being put on and off, and the idea of the dreams. Meaning a dream is limitless. You could envisage anything. Where were Yosef's dreams all those years that he was in jail? But Yosef knew his dreams were of a prophetic nature. He knew that's where he's supposed to stand up. Ask Yosef, how are you going to get there? I don't know. But I'm not the one that put the dreams in my head. And I'm not the one that has to figure out how to make them happen. I'll do my best. He tries. But at the end of the day, he's the one that put the dreams in my head. But dreams give us the capacity to see beyond the moment. So the strength of the Jewish people is very often the capacity to see beyond the moment. Not to let a tzara stifle us. Our history is filled with tzaras. Our history is filled with dark ages, dark periods. And our capacity to light that light, to turn on the Chanukiah, one light, and say, I don't know where that one light is going to lead. You ask the Chashmonaim. Ask them, hey, guys, why are you turning on the lights? It's going to take 8 days. Is it better to start and stop? Why don't you start when you'll be able to have a continuum? Well, isn't it a pretty bad idea to start if you won't be able to continue? Answer, I got to do mine. Today I could do it. I don't know where it'll lead to tomorrow. That's God's job, what'll be tomorrow. I can't answer what'll be tomorrow. I have to know what I have to do today. So I'm doing what I do today. You ask Yosef, how are you going to get out of this jail? I don't know. Who's going to come for you? I don't know. Doesn't seem like anyone's coming. It's been 2 decades. No one's come looking for Yosef. It's been 22 years. No one's come looking. He doesn't know what the future holds. None of us know what the future holds. But that capacity to do what I have to do and leave it to God to figure out how to resolve beyond a certain point. I have to do my ishtadlut, but I also have to know that He's running the show at the end of the day. That's a very delicate balance. And so Yosef does stick in the line that saves the day, and he says, Paro, you got to set up someone here who's responsible, who's intelligent, who has understanding, and make him responsible for Egypt, to divide up the land, and to gather all the food. And Yosef here is saying something very, very smart. Most people in investments, when a stock is going up, they buy it. When it's going down, they sell it. And the truth is, you should go the other way around. When the stock's down, that's when you buy. When the stock's up, that's when you sell. But people figure, if it's been going up, it'll keep going up. If it's been going down, it'll keep going down. An intelligent person realizes that things don't keep going up and things don't keep going down. Yosef tells Paro, most people are not going to be able to do that. You cannot leave it up to the nation. Our job as leaders is to take the nation and tax the nation and take the blessings and hold on to it for the nation for a future date. Because you need someone really smart to be able to say, hey, this blessing is going to be over. That this economic prosperity is going to reach an end mark. Everyone always thinks it's just going to keep going up. So that's what they do. And Paro says, okay, this is the smartest man we've met. How does he know my dream? I didn't even tell him the dream accurately. Now that you've gotten all this, you're the smartest. So you're in charge of my house. You're in charge of my army. I'm the king, but you're going to be the man in charge. And he gives him the ring. And he dresses him in royal clothing. And they go out for a tour of Egypt. And they start, all the girls are throwing at him all their jewelry. Yosef's 30 years old, so he was 17 when he left his father's house. 13 years have passed. 22 is at the end when he meets up with his father. 13 years have passed. And he tours Egypt. And we have on tradition that when he went touring in Egypt, so all the girls stood on the rooftops and out of the balconies, and they'd all throw down something to get this new young prince. No, he's a bachelor. Maybe he'll marry them. Egypt, in Egypt, you don't care about much else but the guy's looks, right? He could be married, she could be married. That doesn't matter. In Egypt, the Talmud tells us no one knew who was whose kids, because he was out cheating on his wife and she was out cheating on him. And every so often they'd meet back at home. But do you know who the kids, who the real father is? No one knows. So men were running after men, women were running after women. When the Torah wants to prohibit two women going together, the Torah words it as, don't do like the Egyptians. That's why the Torah prohibits it. So Yosef's going and he's not looking. He's not looking. What's he going to look at? Kapav midud tavona. His hands went from being a slave who was in charge of the pots, and now he's becoming prince. Banot tsa'ada alei shul. The girls were dancing on the walls, trying to get him to look, but he didn't look. And then one girl throws down a locket, that's the only thing she's got, and it lands in his lap. And he looks in the locket, and it says God's hidden name on it. And he opens the locket, and there's a whole story. And the story says, this girl was born to Dina when she was raped by Shechem. She's a Jewish girl. And please help this girl. And she's from my family, signed Yaakov Ben Yitzchak. So he tells the driver, stop. Who threw this? And they go searching. Cinderella, right? Whose locket is this? There are different midrashim as to how exactly Dina's daughter made it down to Egypt. But we'll take one, that Potiphar was a eunuch. He couldn't have kids. And his wife wanted kids, so she adopted this girl. Yaakov saw that the brothers felt that the girl doesn't have a right to be in the family of Yaakov. So in order to protect her, Yaakov gave her up for adoption. Yaakov sent her down and had her in this royal family of Potiphar. So Yosef knew this girl, theoretically. They were in the same house together. This girl, Asnas, was together with him. So you'd ask yourself, what kind of mother is this for his kids? You know, her genealogy ain't too great. This is like, it's like marrying Saddam's daughter. So Saddam raped a Jewish girl, so now he has a kid. Who wants to marry such a girl? You say, what kind of genes has she got? Shechem. What?
Ruth was far
She is quite possibly one of the greatest women of Jewish history, Asnas, because she is going to raise Yosef's two children in the most disgusting, despicable, immoral society in the world. In the worst society that ever existed. I mean, I guess Sodom and Amora were worse. But the moral, what? It says that God put us down in Egypt because Egypt was the terrible place of the day. I don't know how to compare generation-wise, but here she is in a land that's the filthiest place in the world. She's in Pharaoh's palace, where you could imagine this is like Las Vegas multiplied 15 times. The immodesty is rampant over there. And she has to bring up these two kids. So if you'd say she brought them up in a decent way, we'd say, okay, fine. But no, these two kids end up equaling two tribes of Israel. Meaning her education is going to rival Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. Her education is going to be so fantastic that at the end of Yaakov's days, Yaakov says, and God approves it, Ephraim u'Menashe k'Shimon, k'Ruven v'Shimon y'Yuli. These two kids are going to be equal to my two kids. Now they must have been something. These two kids, how'd they get there? Yosef? Well, usually chinuch revolves around the mother. So Rav Hirsch says, that's why we bless our kids. Every Friday night, Yisimcha Elokim k'Ephraim v'Chim Nashe. We don't say like any other tribes, because Ephraim and Menashe grew up in the Golas. So when Yosef takes her as his wife, Yosef could say, wait a second, her father was a rapist. Her father was a terrible person. Who's her father? Shechem. This girl, Asnas, was born by Dinah and Shechem. And Yosef doesn't say that. He says she's the only Jewish girl in town. And she was quite a spectacular Jewish girl. Just goes to show us something. You know, sometimes people get misled a little bit by this concept of yichus. Yichus is important. It's very nice when you got it. But you got to remember that there's also the question, who's the person? Look at who the person is. And here you see that Yosef and his wife succeed in bringing to the world, with this woman, what no other tribe succeeds. And they have the greatest environment. They're living on a yeshuv where everyone's from. Right? They're living in their little bubble. They're living in Beit El or Neriah or Talmon. They got everyone around them. It's Yaakov, it's the brothers, it's everything, but none of them succeed like them. They're out in Mitzrayim and they're back in Eretz Canaan. So yes, we try to find good environments for our kids' chinuch. But we have to know that part of the gauge is who am I looking at? What kind of mother is she going to be? And Yosef wins big time. Yosef ends up marrying her. And who would Yosef marry had that story not happened with Dina? Chazal repeatedly point out to us that every step of what happened with Dina was pre-calculated by God. It didn't just happen. It's very traumatic, if you think about it, to her, to Yaakov, to the family. You have war breaking out over what happens there. But at the end of the day, Chazal say every step of the way was calculated. Why did Yaakov deserve it? Why did Dina deserve it? And even the plan about what would be with the child that would be born from that, that was also part of the plan, that Hashem was taking care. 17 years in advance, or however many years in advance, Hashem was taking care that Yosef will have a shidduch when he goes down to Mitzrayim. He should have a good Jewish girl to marry. So Yosef has the kids before the famine hits. And here we see that once there's a famine, Hashem, we're not supposed to, a person is supposed to be considerate of where society is holding. And that concept we learn halachically from the next few lines where Yaakov tells his children, Lama titra'u? He says, why should you guys look different in the eyes of our neighbors? They don't have food, we do have food. From here, Chazal learned, let's say a person has to eat on a fast day. Everyone's fasting, there's no rain, everyone's fasting, it's Tisha B'Av, and he just had a heart attack, he's on heart medication, he's, for whatever reason, he's supposed to eat. So the Gemara says, don't go outside eating your snacks. You have to eat. You eat in private. You don't go showing everyone, I'm okay, I'm eating. You have to eat. No one's telling you not to eat. Quite the contrary. You have to eat, eat. But take into account that they're not eating. Lama titro, why should you look different? Why should you look bad in the eyes of everyone? They're fasting. You have to show that you're like them. So Yaakov tells his kids, even though we don't really need the food right now, go down to Egypt. Why should our neighbors all look and say, oh, Yaakov's family, they're okay, they don't need it. Historically, when Jews became comfortable in their hosting countries, when they started building mansions, and they started causing the neighbors to look at them and say, why are they having it so good? Lama titra'u? Why are we suffering economically and they're doing okay? That's when anti-Semitism went up on the rise. They didn't like seeing that. And Yaakov warns his kids, our neighbors will not like seeing the fact that we're not hit by this famine. So let's, at least on the outside, let's play it like we are. So they go down to Egypt. And the Pasuk says, the brothers go down as 10. A minion. Unified. And the Pasuk calls them the brothers of Yosef. The brothers of Yosef. Chazal say they went down to find Yosef for whatever price it would cost. So you ask yourself, where you guys been? It's been 13 years. Yaakov doesn't send Binyamin. He says, maybe something bad will happen on the way. And our sages say, from here we learn that even though there is a Shgacha Pratit, yes, Hashem watches over what we do, but if you put yourself in a situation of danger, then bad things could happen. You see, the Pasuk says it. Yaakov says, I'm not sending him because something bad could happen. What does that mean? If he's at home, it won't happen. If he's traveling, it might happen. You see, a clear Pasuk against the silliness that people say sometimes. People sometimes say, if I'm supposed to die, I'll die. If I'm not, I won't. I can travel down those roads where they're shooting on the road. It doesn't matter because I'm not. If that bullet's meant for me, then it could get me here too. You see, not that way. The Pasuk says not that way. Chazal say on this Pasuk, not that way. Chazal say on this very Pasuk that you see from Yaakov. Yaakov said, I'm not sending him because the roads are dangerous. Okay? So Chazal tell us when they entered the city, they went through all 10 gates. They said, we'll cover the city. So each one enters from a different gate. And then they scan the whole city. And then they start going to the brothels. They figure that's where they're going to find Yosef. That's what they're still thinking of him. Meaning on the one hand, they want to bring him back. On the other hand, they figure that's where we'll hear about him. That's where we'll find him. And Yosef has been reviewing the records of all the passport control who entered, who leaves. And he sees that his brothers entered, and he brings them in, and he starts attacking them. He says, where are you guys from? They say, from Canaan. We came to buy bread. And Yosef recognizes them. He sees they don't recognize him. He remembers the dream, and he says, you guys are all spies. They distrusted him. They said, your dreams are because you want to rule over us. So now he flips the table on them, and he says, he shows as though he's not trusting them. You guys are all spies. You came here to spy out the land. What'd you all enter through 10 different gates? Normal people all come in together. Why didn't you come together? So they say, no. He says, you obviously want to see how to attack the country. They say, no, we came to buy food. We're all one family. It's true. And Yosef says, no, if you're all one family, why didn't you come together? So they say, okay, we lost the brother. We're looking for him. We left the little brother at home. We're 12. We're the 10 that are left. We came looking for that brother. He's missing. So Yosef says, no. You're all spies and I'll prove it to you. Send someone bring the little brother and you guys will stay in prison and we'll check out if it's right or not. You guys are liars. And he sends them all to prison and leaves them there to stew for 3 days. He was sitting in a pit. They're sitting in prison. On the third day, he tells them, I'm scared of God. What's he telling them? What were you guys thinking when you threw your brother into the pit and sold him? Where was God in your calculations? He doesn't say it. But he's replaying, he's trying to bring them to a point of doing tshuva. These guys didn't really do tshuva yet. When they happen to be going down to Mitzrayim to buy bread, they say, actually, now's a good opportunity. We're not leaving. We're going to pay whatever it takes to get Yosef. Where were you for 13 years? He's been through everything and he doesn't hold it against them, but he feels like, wait a second, they're not where they're supposed to be holding. How come they didn't come looking for me? When they need bread, they come down to Mitzrayim. But that obviously means that we, the Jewish people, who are about to enter the servitude of Mitzrayim are not unified. And if we're not unified, we will not be able to stand up to it. Yosef, Chazal tell us, when he's interpreting the dreams to Paro, Yosef realizes something that Yaakov does not yet realize. Yosef realizes that we are standing at the threshold of Golus Mitzrayim. Yosef realizes that's it. It's about to begin. This famine is what's going to lead the Jewish people into Egypt, and now the Golus is going to begin. And Yosef says, how could we stand this? We're not going to last this Golus if we're not united. The only hope we have is if we help one another. If we, the Jews, are not united, then the nations are going to destroy us. The only hope we have is if we're united. So Yosef is sitting there thinking, now that he's king, he has 7 years, and the brothers are not, no one bothers saying a word, so now it's been 20 years since he's heard from his brothers, 20 years since they sold him, and no one bothers coming down looking for Yosef. So Yosef says, how are we going to work this out? How are the Jewish people going to be united and stand up to the challenges that still face them? So when the brothers come and Yosef sees them, so Yosef starts questioning them. And then he hears that they wanted to pick up that brother, okay? That sounds positive, but there still remains the burning question, where have you been for 20 years? So Yosef says, okay, we're not yet ready to reveal who I am to them. Because if I reveal to them the way it is now, then I'm going to be that king they hate. I'm going to be that guy who had the dreams. So first, we have to learn a lesson here about unity. So Yosef throws them into jail for 3 days. 3 days pass and he walks in and says, you know, I'm scared of God. He's throwing something at them. Think about it. If you guys are true, we're going to leave one brother in jail and you guys go home and bring the food and bring down the little brother and then I'll know it's the truth. What's Yosef telling them? There's a halacha that says that if a group of bandits come to a caravan and tell the caravan, we want one Jew. We'll rape one girl or we'll kill one Jew and the rest of you will let go. They're not allowed to take someone and give them over. They're not allowed to say, okay, you go. We're all running, you go. Yosef says to them, I'm going to take one of you. And if you're telling me the truth and you come back, all of you, with that little brother, he's going to live. And if not, he's going to die. And that's going to be the proof whether you're spies or brothers. Because there's no way you guys can wait out there and think he's going to live. Now, if you think he's going to die, so then how could you give me one of you? You guys have to fight, all for one, right? Unless you're telling the truth, and then you'll bring the little brother, and then there's no bigger proof than that. You wouldn't endanger another person and try to trick me, because I'll interview and I'll catch any tricks. And the brothers are stuck. What are they going to say? So the brothers start saying, you know, we're to blame. Our brother was suffering, he begged us, and we didn't listen. And that's why we're stuck in this rut. Were they right or were they wrong? Were they right in selling Yosef or were they wrong in selling Yosef? You don't see that they hold they were wrong yet. What they're saying is we should have been more merciful to him. And Reuven says, I told you, which is discussed among the Mefarshim, what his point was here. What was he telling them? I told you. What Reuven was saying was, in Shemayim they are paying us back for this, but not me. I don't deserve this. I didn't have a hand in selling Yosef. I told you and I don't deserve this. And that's why Reuven is going to step forward with confidence when they get back home. Reuven can tell his father, I'll take responsibility. Nothing's going to happen to Binyamin. And Reuven is more confident than the other brothers because Reuven knows, he says, if this is a punishment for what happened, well, I didn't do anything wrong there. I just tried to save him. So I'm not going to fall because I don't deserve it. So they go back home, they see their sacks full, they see the money. Yaakov gets scared. He says to them, what'd you do to me? Yosef, Shimon, now you want Binyamin? I'm the one that ends up suffering all these things. The brothers came and presented it as matter of fact. Shimon says, what's matter? Yaakov says, what's matter of fact about this? I lost Yosef. That didn't seem to bother anyone. You just say, hey, Dad, is this his? Do you recognize this? Now you come and you talk to me like it's normal that you left Shimon behind. And then you tell me, give me the third kid. Well, what's wrong with you guys? Reuven says, I have four kids, Dad. You could kill two of them. You could punish me with two of them. Reuven says, I could discuss with you this world. We're talking about this world. The world to come, well, I have a mitzvah of pru rebu. So I got two or four. I could talk to you about two. The other two, they're my mitzvah tashem. I'm not going to play around with the world to come here. But I'm telling you that nothing's going to happen. And Yaakov says, no way. And Yehuda, when he sees that Reuven doesn't succeed, so he says, okay, Dad, I'll take it on myself in the world to come. And Reuven and Yehuda ends up suffering for having said that. And Yaakov says to them, why'd you do this to me? Why'd you tell them you have another brother? And they said, well, he started asking us questions, and he knew everything. He started telling us, you were on the upper bunk bed, you were on the lower bunk bed, you had a little scratch when you were a kid, you two always used to squabble about who's going to get the chocolate, you two always used to squabble about who's going to play first. Each one of us, he started talking to us about things from when we were little kids. It was like he knew everything about us. He's some kind of EGBG sorcerer. He knew things that no one would know. It was as though he grew up in bed with us. Yeah, Yosef did. So we were scared. What were we supposed to say when he suddenly seems to know everything about us? He looks at us and he says, you guys are from this mother, you guys are from that mother. He knows everything without our saying it. So Yehuda stands up, and here Yehuda again starts taking the leadership. And Yaakov says, okay, go with gifts. And that's what we discussed many times in the past few weeks, that Jewish history is filled with shmearing. Yeah. You guys know what shmearing is. Everyone likes a person that comes with gifts. So Yaakov says, bring him whatever gifts we have from this country that he doesn't have there. Take double the money. Maybe the prices went up. And go. And Hashem should give you mercy before him. And I'm worried. I'm not so confident you guys are coming back safely. And they go. They're coming down and they stand before Yosef. Now, Binyamin knew that Yosef was alive all this time. Binyamin named his children after that. And Binyamin isn't the kid anymore. Binyamin is in his 30s, and everyone's treating him like a little boy. He's not a little boy. He has 10 kids of his own. They have a meal, and Yosef and the brothers sit down to eat. This is the first time either one is going to drink wine. They haven't drank wine since they sold Yosef, neither had he. And he asked them, is peace with your father? And they answer him that there is peace. It turns out in the interval from their first visit to their second visit, their grandfather passed away, Yitzchak passed away, and now Yaakov is left all alone. And he brings out Shimon. And they prepare this gift for Yosef. And when he sees Binyamin, Binyamin has grown. This isn't the Binyamin he left behind. So he asks, is that him? And they say, yeah. And he says, Hashem should have extra mercy upon you. And he goes back and cries, and he washes his face, and they eat. And when they eat, again, he starts saying, you sit here, you sit here, you sit here. And then he tells Binyamin, you lost your mother as a little child. I also lost my mother as a little child. Okay, we'll eat together. So he and Binyamin eat together, and this is already setting the scene for Binyamin to be blamed for stealing the goblet, because he sat at the same table as Yosef. And when they leave, he tells the one in charge of his house, make sure they see you put back the money that each one paid. We're going to show them that we're treating them with royalty. They don't even have to pay for the food after everything they've been through. But put the goblet in the bottom of the little one's sack. And Haboker Or, when it was light in the day, then the brothers were sent off. From here, Chazal teaches us that a person shouldn't start his journeys when it's still dark. You wait until there's normal light. A person shouldn't be traveling when he might stumble in the way. And that's for you guys who are going Yam Layam. You're making all these trips now in Hanukkah break. So Chazal taught us, you camp before the sun sets and you start traveling after the sun rises. Don't go traveling in the dark. You never know what snakes and other things are in the way. So, what? Right. If you're hiking, if you're going on a bus, fine. The buses can travel at 4 a.m. But if you're going to start the hike, so wait till there's light. They leave the city, and Yosef sends his son Menashe together with the army, and he catches up to them, and he starts yelling at them, what's wrong with you guys? That's the goblet my master drinks. That's the goblet he uses for his sorcery. What Yosef did at the meal was he'd pick up the goblet and knock it and say, oh, I hear that you guys did this. And he'd knock it again and he'd say, oh, I hear that you guys killed the whole town of Shechem. Reuven, what I hear about you, okay, we won't talk about that. Hey, he's knocking the goblet and every time he starts talking and they're all blushing, how does he know all this about us? Now, at the end of the meal, the goblet disappears. The goblet is placed in Binyamin's sack, and Menashe catches up to them, and he starts yelling at them, how'd you take my master's goblet? The thing he does his sorcery with. What, you really thought that without that he won't know what's going on? He has his other sources. And they say, well, why do you say that? You know, we brought back the money that you guys, that was by mistake put by us. How could we steal anything? Whoever is found by it, he's going to be killed. The Noahide law, right? One who transgresses Noahide law gets a death penalty, and we will all be your slaves. And he says, you know, I have a right to go like you're saying, but no, the one who's caught will be a slave, and you guys claim you have nothing to do with it, so you guys go home. So they quickly take down their sacks, and they check, and they know where they're going to find it, so they start searching in the eldest, and nothing doing till they hit Binyamin. And they find the goblet. And the brothers turn to Binyamin and they yell at him, you thief, son of a thief. Your mother stole and that's why she died. She stole Grandpa Lavan's truffim. Now you're going just like your mother. That's the way the string goes after the bucket. When the bucket falls down the well, the string goes down with it. Your father, your mother fell down this well, you're going down this well too. But what'd you have to drag us all with you? What's wrong with you? So they are Hoshed, Bikshayrim. They suspect someone who did nothing wrong. And they all tear their clothing. Now, the lesson had to be taught. Yosef is teaching them a lesson here. But Hashem holds Tzadikim to the T. And because Menashe was the one who caused the brothers to tear their clothing, in Shemaim it was decreed that Menashe's own children would be torn to two. And that's why Menashe's tribe is divided, half on the eastern side of the Jordan and half inside Israel. No other tribe is divided like that. Menashe. And they come back to Yosef's house. And Yosef continues playing the role. What'd you guys do? Didn't you know that a guy like me could figure things like this out? And Yehuda says, what could we say? We're all your servants, us and the one who the goblet was caught by. Yehuda, you notice his bargaining tactic? Initially he said the one who's caught will die and the rest are slaves. Now that he stands before Yosef, he moves it up a notch. He's starting to bargain. And he says, we'll all be your servants, including the guy who was caught. He's working his way at the bargaining table. The guy already conceded, I won't kill that guy. Menashe already said, I won't kill him. No, I'll just take that one as a slave and send the rest of you home. So Yehuda starts working it up. Let's just make sure no one's going to die here. Yosef says, no. I'm just going to take the one who's got caught with a goblet. You guys go home in peace. You guys, I believe you. You guys are fine. Go home to your father. Everything's okay. And Yosef is applying the heat. So our parsha ends in suspense. Whereas our parsha ends where we have the great face-off between two forces in Am Yisrael. The force of Yosef and the force of Yehuda. Now, Chazal say that next parsha will take us to the ultimate standoff, the ox and the lion. Yosef is the strength of the ox, Yehuda is the strength of the lion. Each one has their strength. Two kings are going to face off, and right now they're sizing one another up, and Yehuda has the weaker hand. But our parsha began with a certain theme, a theme that's been taking us throughout these parshiot, the capacity to dream and see beyond the facade. The capacity to realize that a tzara is merely a mask. A tzara is merely something that seems to be standing in the way right now. V'haikar shelo lefached klal. Don't let the fear take a grip. No. Figure out how am I going to overcome this hurdle and keep advancing in life. And that is the strength of Yehuda. And we, as onlookers, we know that that's what's going on here. For the moment, we're suddenly taken by the suspense of the story. But we all know this is just a mask. We all know this is a facade. We're taken by the feelings that they must have felt as they stood there. But this has to teach us a lesson. All of life, we're all but puppets on the stage. And there's someone up there pulling the strings. And at any moment, they could pull the strings differently. So we have to do our best, but we have to remember that Baruch Hashem, there's someone else running the show. Whenever I'd go on a shidduch, and then it didn't work, so I'd call up to say thank you to the person who set me up. And then they'd always apologize, I'm sorry it didn't work. And I'd always say the same line. I'd always say, "What do you? You have nothing to apologize about. You did the greatest thing in the world. You got me married, and thanks to you, I have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren." What do I mean? Chazal say, if a person has the intent to do something good, Hashem considers it as though they did it. Kavanat tova, Kadosh Baruch Hu mitzarfa l'maaseh. So I said it was a great idea, it just didn't work out. But from your perspective, you did what it took for me to be married. You set me up. We tried. It didn't work. But that means that in Shemayim, you had a kavanat tova, you meant to do a mitzvah, so in Shemayim it's already you did it. So then in Shemayim, you married me off and you brought kids and grandchildren and everything. Now practically down here on earth, we got to make sure it happens. But in Shemayim, you did it already. And then I'd always end off with the line that I think is what sums up this week's parsha. I'd always say, and don't worry, because Baruch Hashem, it's not in your hands or in my hands. We're doing the ishtadlus, but at the end of the day, it's in His hands. Shabbat Shalom.